Headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We are less than 2 hours away from the State of the Union address, but today Democrats already on the attack. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says the state of the Trump administration is chaos.
On the economy, health care, governance, foreign policy, it's abundantly clear that the Trump administration has been failing the middle class in this country.
What can we expect from the president tonight and the Democratic response? We're talking about it. My guests are Howard University political science professor Dr. Niambi Carter and Talk Media News reporter Justin Duckham, and you. Our listeners, give us a call. Lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Dr. Carter, Justin, thank you so much for coming in again. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Harold.
Okay, Dr. Carter, you first. What should be the main thrust of the president's speech tonight? What will we hear the most about?
I think he's going to make the case again for this wall on the southern border that's caused him so much consternation. I think he's going to pivot to the economy being healthy. I think he's going to try to lean into policy promises that he made and the things that he thinks are going well for his administration right now.
Mm-hmm. Justin, isn't that going to be a little difficult to do considering how rough this past year has been?
Not just difficult, but also bad politics. Before this, we had a Morning Consult Politico poll that showed, out of all of the possible issues that he could talk about, be it health care, be it immigration, be it even tackling global poverty, which usually doesn't get much of a rise out of Americans, the wall ranked dead last. So if he focuses on that, that is at his own peril. And instead, we're going to be seeing him trying to give lofty overtures towards unity, which also asks Americans to pretty much ignore everything that has happened up until tonight.
Unity and bipartisanship, is that really a red herring for the president, considering the fact that he lets Twitter talk for him, and one would argue that's his real personality?
I mean, listen, I think this man lies at a pace that we can barely keep up with. And so anything that he says tonight, I think, should be taken with a grain of salt. I'm not certain that we're going to get anything real out of this president anytime soon. So if he talks about unity and bipartisanship, I'm not sure what that actually means, because he's made it clear that unless he gets his way, he doesn't want to deal. He is not this person who likes to negotiate. And I think, to her credit, Nancy Pelosi has shown that she's not going to negotiate with him either about certain fundamental things.
He is entering this speech a week late. I can't necessarily say a dollar short, but it's definitely a week late after the longest government shutdown, partial or otherwise, in American history. And while some of the numbers suggest that the economy may not have broadly suffered in the full extent of looking at the economy, but $11 million was estimated to have been lost in $11 billion, forgive me, during that 35 days. How can he project strength when we've come out of this shutdown?
And that's what's so bizarre about a lot of this. Trump has always portrayed himself as a strong man, somebody who is able to, if not achieve a deal via his, cunning or whatnot, can just kind of strong arm it. And what we saw a number of days ago on January 23rd, I believe, when the government was reopened, was him basically caving, him taking the same deal that was offered to him a month previously for the continuing resolution to reopen the government, not getting his wall, and just basically falling back on a special committee, something that he's previously mocked time and time again. So there's really no clear way that he can come back from that. And also, the cameras are going to catch the response that he gets. This is the first time he's been speaking to a divided government. There is going to be Nancy Pelosi standing behind him, somebody who has, you know, basically portrayed herself as the anti-Trump and has been doing quite well politically because of that. And that is going to be a remarkable symbol throughout this and something that viewers at home are going to be watching every step of the way.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the State of the Union address less than 2 hours away. What are you expecting to hear from President Trump? The lines are open. Give us a call. Dr. Carter, will we see the House looking like whack-a-mole, where you have one group standing in applause and another group sitting and then something else and the other group is sitting and standing, particularly as Justin just mentioned, this is a House divided and the Democrats have the House?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, because I think to a certain extent, it's like, how ardent do his Republican compatriots want to be in their support of Donald Trump? I mean, especially if he's saying things that are crazy. You know, I don't know what it's going to look like, to be fair. And I think Justin's point is right in terms of having a room full of people who can make facial expressions, who can voice their disapproval, is something that he is not accustomed to. And I think that's really important because this is also the most diverse Congress we've seen. And I think he will stand sort of in stark contrast to that space. So I don't know what people are going to be doing. I'm guessing this may be a more subdued State of the Union, particularly if there's another shutdown that's looming in another less than 2 weeks away, right on the 15th. So I don't know how happy they want to be, because the fact of the matter, there are a lot of people who were hurt by this shutdown, people who were contract employees who are not getting back pay, low-wage workers who will not be able to recoup those losses. So I don't know how strident they want to be in their support.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. What do you expect to hear from President Trump tonight during the State of the Union address? Are you going to watch? That's another question. Are you going to be paying attention to what the president has to say? And do you expect him to declare a national emergency in order to get what he wants for the wall? Boy, that was a deep breath right there, Dr. Carter. I'll let you start with that one first.
I just think it's a really bad policy. I mean, in part because while he'll be able to divert some funds away from other budgets for this wall, it still will be a shortfall. He won't be able to collect all the money he needs. And it's an unpopular policy. It's not a smart policy. It's not a great way to use money. I think most everyone believes that this is a waste of money, from the security community, even to the logistics of how this wall is going to get built, taking people's property and land. I mean, you have Will Hurd out of Texas, the Republican congressman, saying he doesn't think this is a good idea, and he actually has skin in the game. I mean, this is his community that is right there affected by the wall. So, I mean, he can do that if he wants to. I just think it's a very short-sighted political move for a project that is not even wanted by most Americans.
Justin, he's serious about it. There are reports that about 2 weeks ago he met with contractors who were interested in building this wall. So he is serious about it.
He's been saying that. But what we've also been hearing from the White House is that he's likely not going to bring it up tonight, although that comes with a big caveat of, you know, this is a fluid situation that could always change. And that reflects the fact that this is a president who can go off prompter and who can make news, you know, at the drop of a hat by just tweeting out something. But, you know, he's given about three big national speeches this month, with counting the State of the Union, and he hasn't really addressed why he would have the legal standing to build the wall. I don't think he's going to mention it tonight, which probably does him a disservice, since at some point, if he's going to move forward with this, he needs to explain why it's an emergency and why he needs to get the nation involved in a big constitutional fight. And he's just been putting it off, which really, again, begs the question over whether or not this is an actual emergency, if you can keep on kicking the can down the road.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the State of the Union, about 90 minutes away from this moment. What are you expecting to hear from the president? Do you want to hear anything specifically? And are you going to watch? I'd like to hear from you. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Any chance that he may mention the controversy in Virginia regarding the racist photographs and Virginia's embattled Governor Ralph Northam? What do you think?
I don't think so. I don't think this is going to serve him well to involve himself in a state-level skirmish like that. And I don't think he wants to remind anybody else of his own missteps around race and women.
Mm. Oh, how about that? Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think he wants to say anything about this.
Although the White House is looking for unity, and, you know, by attacking Northam, that would probably be the most unifying thing he could do up on there. But, no, I don't think he's going to do it either, but, you know.
Speaking of unity, look at the people who have so far announced that they are not attending. You know, legendary Congressman John Lewis from Georgia, Earl Blumenauer from Oregon, Hank Johnson from Georgia. These are boycotts. They are making statements against the president. Good idea or bad idea?
You know, I think as long as we don't have a Joe Wilson moment where somebody jumps up and screams out, "You lie," it's probably fine and effective. And beyond just that, we see other members trying to deliver their message in their own ways. A lot of the women are wearing white to represent early suffragists and to add an element of, I guess, early feminism there. And then, you know, with the guests that the members are bringing, there is a lot that could be said about that. We have Pelosi bringing Jose Andres, who really helped out a lot of people during two of the president's biggest failures, the recovery in Puerto Rico and the shutdown in D.C. We have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez bringing the woman who confronted Jeff Flake in the elevator. We have transgender soldiers coming. So there is going to be a lot of politics that are delivered without people necessarily making a scene.
But the thing about Jose Andres is that he, you know, he doesn't do fast food. And so it's probably not somebody that the president no hamburgers from Jose Andres.
No.
I need to take a break. We'll talk more about the State of the Union coming up at 9 o'clock from Capitol Hill. Stephanie calling from Maryland. We're going to talk to you next. Lines are still open. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I want to hear from you. What do you think about the State of the Union? Are you going to watch? Are you expecting anything? Let us know. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. Stay with us. This conversation continues on Sirius XM, Channel 141.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, Sirius XM Channel 142, HBCU and Sirius XM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're asking, what can we expect from President Trump's State of the Union speech tonight and the Democratic response? My guests are Howard University political science professor Dr. Niambi Carter and Talk Media News reporter Justin Duckham. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stephanie, calling from Maryland. Thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
So this is Stephanie again. I guess the question was, what will we expect?
What do you expect? And what do you want to hear?
I expect nothing but a whole bunch of gibberish like an infant from this joker. He is, you know, the most incompetent person to ever sit at the highest level of a job to run a country, you know, the U.S. Pathetic. And as I was also saying, if he gets up there and talk about the economy, that's a joke as well. Like I said, I was a federal government. I am a federal government employee that was in like a partial shutdown with my other colleague who had to suffer with his ignorance and, you know, playing them like they some chess move pawn. And keeping them off their job. Yeah, they're getting their pay, but it's just the principle behind it. And then to deny us is just like we still in the furlough, to deny us our COLA, a cost of living increase never ever before. It's a joke. And your last caller said he hoped this is not a Joe Wilson moment. I just said the very opposite. I hope it is a Joe Wilson moment because he does lie. And I will also inject, it could very well be a George W. Bush moment where somebody throw a shoe up there. That's what I'm expecting to happen. Some real rumble in the jumble up there in the U.S. Capitol.
Well, there you go. Well, obviously, Stephanie has been watching the news for a long time. Stephanie, thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And she makes an interesting point. Will the Democrats be civil tonight?
I mean, it's sort of, that always bothers me, that word civil, right? Being civil to an uncivilized person, I mean, what does that actually entail? I mean, I think they will. I think it doesn't serve them to look like, that Joe Wilson moment it wasn't a good look. I mean, I think people have reflected on that and think about that moment, the condemnation that came for Joe Wilson and his party as a result. I don't think they'll do that. I think Justin is right in terms of who they've invited. I mean, Kamala Harris has invited a government worker who was affected by the shutdown and who will not be receiving back pay as her guest. So I think the widespread rebuke that is in the tension that will be in the room will probably be all the shame that Donald Trump gets from Democrats.
I think your caller kind of tapped into something, which is there is a big desire in, I guess, the Democratic base and just the general population, who leans to the left, to see Democrats be less civil, to see, some more, I guess, heated actions and more of a stronger stance against this president. So I think there's probably a desire out there. I doubt we're going to see much of it. I don't think it would really benefit Democrats too much to have that. But I certainly think there is a lot of people who want to see a Joe Wilson moment. I'm not going to touch upon the George Bush moment stuff, but I think that that outrage is certainly out there, and Democrats are aware of it.
Is it possible, and we don't know this, but is it possible that Nancy Pelosi had a huddle and said that we're going to keep the same kind of tone that she kept during the shutdown non-negotiations? Because as angry as the president was on Twitter and the like, Nancy Pelosi remained, like I said, very, very much in the middle. And she did not raise her voice. She did not seem very angry. She kept a very moderated tone. Is it possible that she laid down the law for the Democrats before tonight?
Probably. I mean, my guess is that, I mean, Nancy's not going to do a lot of screaming and yelling. I don't think that's her style. But also, when you're the person in power and you actually have the leverage, what is the point of screaming and yelling and hollering? I mean, I don't know that she needed to necessarily tell them to toe the line. I mean, but we know that there have been some firecrackers in there. We know Ocasio-Cortez, Tlaib have said some things that people have gotten their feathers in.
Colorful
a bunch of
metaphors.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And so I think there's probably some concern about that. But I think there is a level of seriousness that people are taking this event with. And I don't think they want anything to derail people from hearing perhaps this nonsense that he might be spewing tonight, and that perhaps the more powerful message is to let him just talk.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Let me go back to the phone lines. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Murray calling from Alabama. Thanks for calling, Murray. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm not going to watch the State of the Union. And I'd like to thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Let me ask you, what part of Alabama are you calling from, Murray?
Anniston, Alabama.
Okay, yeah, there you go with that little southern Alabama, south central Alabama. Go right ahead.
Right. Well, it's just that, how many times can you hear a liar lie? I'm sorry, alternative truth.
Alternate facts, yes.
Right, alternate facts. I mean, come on, he's going to say what he says, and whatever he doesn't say, that he'll say it on Twitter or whatever, and it's just a sham. And I have better things to do with my time than to listen to somebody just tell lies and mistruth. And, I just really feel that it's a shame that we're in this situation. I saw that movie Vice where Dick Cheney had a similar situation where he basically ran it, and George Bush was like a little puppet. And I think that's what we have here. You know, Donald Trump is like a little puppet distracting us. Pence is in the background, you know, passing stuff that we don't even know about until it's too late. And I think they're using that same blueprint. And I hope the Democrats, you know, have a nice response, but it doesn't really matter because he's going to say a bunch of lies.
Yeah. Murray, thank you so much for listening, and thank you for your phone call. I do want to talk, before we go to the Democratic response, I do want to talk a little bit more about the invited guests from the president. The one that really sticks out to me is Alice Johnson, the black woman that he granted clemency for in June of last year. She had been serving a life sentence without parole involving a nonviolent drug case. Talk to me about the optics there, Dr. Carter.
Well, I mean, I think he's trying to make it appear that he is less sympathetic to white racist terrorists by having her there. But let's be clear, he did grant her clemency. Barack Obama didn't do that. So I'm not sure that she asked under Barack Obama, but it is something he did.
Well, I don't think Kim Kardashian was talking to...
Well, she was not advocating then either. But for Alice Johnson, Donald Trump is important. For her family, the fact that she is home, that is a real thing that he did. And I mean, you know, whether she chose to attend is up to her, but I can imagine she owes a huge debt, or feels that she owes him a huge debt. She's out of prison now because of him. So I don't think that's a small thing. I don't think it'll do anything to change anybody's mind about who he is. I mean, it certainly won't do anything for black voters or Democratic voters, but definitely he's having her there, I think, to lend some credibility to him that it won't work, but I think that's why he has her there.
Your thoughts about the optics there?
The president's really trying to preach the message of unity. That's all the White House has been saying in the lead up to this. And there really isn't much to point to when it comes to that. So instead, they're going with trying to talk about this issue, trying to talk about the First Step Act, which was probably the one sole bipartisan notch in his belt that he has to bring out for this. They're also talking a little bit about opportunity zones, which was one aspect of the Republican-led tax bill. That was something where it's, you know, if you're an investor and you put money into an underserved community, you end up getting, kickbacks, to put it simply. So it really shows that there's not much that they can really latch on to here. The guest list is trying to show some kind of a unified message, but you just have to take a close look at how the White House has operated previously. Every time they try to go after something bipartisan, every time they try to have a unified message, they end up stepping on their own feet. And I don't think they're going to be changing any minds with the guests they brought tonight.
Following up on that point, because I remember during the course of the campaign when he would visit the cities, he was talking about, you know, we need to improve our roads. Mm-hmm. We need to improve our bridges. Our bridges are falling down. It's a disgrace. Our roads are falling apart. It's a disgrace. And here we are 2 years in, and we've not had any infrastructure bill, which I think that everyone would agree, infrastructure money not only creates jobs, it does improve, you know, our cities, whether you're driving, whether you're walking. Could we possibly hear that tonight?
I mean, who knows? But again, you know, this is something that he was supposed to do right out of the gate, and it really just shows how bad the White House is at building bipartisan consensus and having the unifying president that they're trying to portray tonight. As soon as he got into office, Mr. Art of the Deal went after Chuck Schumer, called him crying Chuck before they could even start negotiations on this. When they've had possible centrist Democrats who they could cut deals with, like Joe Manchin, they've ended up alienating them and going after them in pretty strict terms. And, he could talk about this. This is something that certainly a lot of Americans want to see. But at this point, people understand what kind of president this is.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's one of the issues he could have won on, right? Nobody disputes that we need better infrastructure. Nobody disputes that Americans need jobs. These were the kinds of things that he could have very easily saw support for from both sides of the aisle, and he didn't. So this was a wasted opportunity, and I don't think it's going to come up again.
And that is one of the bipartisan conversations that we've been hearing about for the past several days, including the reduction in prescription drug prices. But again, the president, during the conversation with the interview, I should say, with CBS just a few days ago, when he was asked about race relations, he went back to the jobs piece, and that's his that's his standard line. And I'm a bit mystified that no one stops him and says, "I didn't ask about the economy. I asked about race relations."
Well, because for him, I mean, as long as you're getting paid and you have a job, then why would you care about race, right? And I think this is some of the sort of missed opportunities here, right? Like, if he really wants to turn the tide on these race questions, he has to actually talk about race, and he can't talk about immigrants. He can't talk about all this other stuff.
But he does talk about immigrants.
Well, but I mean, but you can't blame it on immigrants, right?
Exactly.
Because immigrants, I mean, they didn't do all of the scaffolding that creates, you know, racist infrastructures. They didn't have, you know, they don't have a Stephen Miller that serves next to them, or Steve Bannon, right? These are all people that were on, are on your watch or were on your watch. You hired them, you have them there, you've promoted them, you've promoted their policies. So tell me why I see pictures of you with racist sympathizers. Explain to me why you equivocated on Charlottesville, right? And explain that to me. And make me understand it, because until you can talk about that, then the economy is not going to solve our race problem.
And I think the other issue, too, as it relates to immigration, whether we're talking about undocumented immigrants or legal immigration, I think, Justin, this is a really difficult tightrope to walk, considering the report that came out this week about the firing of undocumented immigrants that have been working at Trump properties for years, after the New York Times report came out saying that there were so many people of Latin descent working in his properties. At the same time, we know that many of these undocumented immigrants are not the lion's share of the violent crime issue in America, and yet he is elevating those families who have lost loved ones to undocumented related crime.
And you mentioned the tightrope, and that is really where it comes in. You know, it's hard to give a soaring, unifying speech when you are focusing on undocumented immigrants as the boogeyman.
Yeah. Need to take a break. When we come back, the Democratic response. Stacey Abrams, the woman who almost was the first black female governor of Georgia. What will we hear from her? Good idea or bad idea? We're talking about it. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue in just a few moments. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking about the State of the Union speech tonight. Coming up in about 1 hour and 10 minutes on Capitol Hill, what are we expecting from President Trump in his second State of the Union speech? Okay, so what are we expecting in the Democratic response from Stacey Abrams, who, of course, you remember, she ran this spirited campaign for governor of the great state of Georgia, just a hair away from becoming the first black woman governor, not only in the state of Georgia, but indeed in the nation. Good idea or bad idea, first of all, to do the response, Justin, because there's been a lot of talk lately about how rising stars have a tendency to burn out after the response.
Yeah, I mean, this is certainly a very big task that she's been given, and it's unfortunate in the sense that whenever somebody gives a good State of the Union response, We don't remember it, but as soon as they fall on their face, we can't stop talking about it. We all remember Marco Rubio. We all remember Bobby Jindal's Mr. Roger moments. But what we're getting right now from Abrams' team and from the Democrats, from the excerpts that they're releasing, it looks like she is going to effectively be shaming Donald Trump. She is going to hit him for the shutdown, calling this a stunt that he engineered, one, in her words, that defied every tenet of fairness and abandoned not just our people but our values. She's going to be talking about voting rights, going after McConnell as well, apparently, saying that wanting everybody to vote is not a power grab, which is what he cast it as when he brushed off the idea of making it a national holiday for election days. So it looks like it's a speech that's going pretty hard after the president while also trying to maintain an optimistic tone. So it should be interesting to say the least.
Wait a minute. That was going hard and remain and keeping
it. I know what I said. I know. Yeah. Yes, I know.
Boy, there was a wall right in between.
what do you
think, Dr. Carter?
Well, I think Abrams recognizes that this is a star-making moment for her. And I think the party also recognizes this is a make-or-break moment for them. They are clearly trying to signal to black women voters who've been a core constituency that has been increasingly unhappy with the ways in which they feel that the Democratic Party has ignored them and has not allowed black women into the leadership of the party, even though black women create a large part of their loyal voter base. I mean, black women have showed out for them time and time again. And in places like Georgia that people thought would never go blue or had the potential to go blue are now battleground states for the first time in decades. So I think she's definitely going to address those issues. But I think it's more important that she be seen, and the fact that she has been selected and entrusted with this responsibility for the Democratic rebuttal is more them trying to send a message, because I think Justin is right. Most people aren't going to really be that in tune to what she says, and she's not the person who's going to be able to deliver these things right at the national level. Congress will do that, and she's not in the U.S. Congress. But her being there is significantly important, and I think the big thing she's going to add is this voting rights piece, because that's been the core of what she's done in Georgia, and she's built an apparatus around getting out the vote there, and I think she's going to pivot to that strength.
Can you just imagine how much she's chomping at the bit for this? You know, you mm-hmm. had the president who said that she was unqualified, you know, a woman who was the minority mm-hmm. leader in Georgia, a woman who went to Yale,
yep.
was being told by a former reality star who ran for president with no actual political background or any sort of policy expertise that she is unqualified. So I think there's going to be some mm-hmm. real feeling behind the speech.
Mm-hmm. And he called her a loser as well.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Which, I mean, she lost by a hair-thin margin, a margin that should have been much larger in a state like Georgia, in part because of voter suppression and the fact that Republicans did not support H.R. 1, that McConnell said this was going to be an attempt for Democrats to win votes. H.R. 1 was the bill that was going to address the voter ethics, campaign mm-hmm. finance, and voter suppression.
But I think that, well, 2 points. First mm-hmm. of all, I don't fully agree with you in that I do believe that people are probably going to pay attention to her, and not just black women and not just black folks. Because I think that there are people, those who, and I'm not talking about far left or mm-hmm. far right, but I think those folks who are in the middle who don't live in Georgia, who don't live in South Carolina, who don't live mm-hmm. in Florida, who are curious about this phenomenon.
Well, I mean, what I mean by not pay attention, I don't mean they're not going to tune in, but I don't think people are going to be hanging on every word. I think this is an opportunity to introduce her to the nation,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, I think it's very clear that Stacey Abrams is a rising star. And I think the Democrats understand that their future, if they're going to have one, has to be built on women like Stacey Abrams, Ocasio-Cortez, Presley, Underwood, Omar. Like, they can't have the same white male leadership or white woman leadership that they've had all this time. So, yeah, people will remember her after this. I don't think they're going to remember everything she said
mm-hmm.
at this, but certainly folks are going to be paying attention in the North Carolinas, in the Ohios, in the Nevadas, right? People who may not have any real recognition of her will after tonight.
But the other thing that is also risky, considering this is supposed to be a bipartisan unity speech from the president, that I'd be very, very curious about what's going to be on his Twitter feed tonight or tomorrow about Stacey Abrams, because black women from April Ryan to Maxine Waters have been at the end of the pointed foil that is his Twitter feed. And it's difficult to have a bipartisan unity speech and then attack the person who is doing the Democratic response. Is it possible that, as we have seen with Nancy Pelosi, that he has remained tame in his criticism?
No. Thank
you.
Every time he has a presidential moment, every time he gets sort of a buzz of being professional and, you know, doing good at the one job you have to do as president, he blows it up about 2 days later and goes on Twitter and says something insane. You know, during the campaign, he got a lot of attention for giving a very well-grounded foreign policy speech. And then before the end of that day, before he could get any positive coverage, he ended up tweeting about Ted Cruz's wife. This is something that happens time and time again. He can't really be president for more than 2 days. So I guarantee in 2 days we'll see an insane tweet and everything will be wiped away.
Mm-hmm. Wall, immigration or illegal immigration, the economy, those are 3 points. What are we missing? Are we going to hear more comments about North Korea? Are we going to hear about Russia? Are we going to hear about Afghanistan, Syria, or even Yemen? Is there going to be an international element to this speech?
I don't think so. I don't think it serves him well. I think the conversation, I mean, he certainly can't talk about Russia. I don't think he wants to have anyone thinking about Mueller and any indictments. I don't think he wants anything close to a scandal near this particular speech. So I don't think he's going to talk about Russia. The Middle East, that's still, at this moment, still unfolding, where his top aides are saying he didn't even consult us about this. He's just doing this. And that just broke in the last hour or so. So I don't think he's going to do much on the international scene.
Justin, real quick.
It's going to be hard, too, just because his foreign policy is all over the place. It's hard to speak in sound bites about your foreign policy when everything's just kind of ad hoc.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I think that's a great way to end this conversation. We are counting down to the second State of the Union speech by President Donald Trump. That's coming up in just 1 hour. And, of course, Stacey Abrams with the Democratic response. It should be an interesting evening, because when it's politics in D.C., it always is. Thank you so much, Dr. Carter. And Justin, thank you both for coming in. I appreciate it. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. For this Tuesday, February 5th, I'm Harold Fisher. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.